Good afternoon and welcome to the Joint House Senate Conference Committee for Transportation Finance and Policy, House File 1684. We are now convening, and our agenda for today is a presentation from the Minnesota Department of Transportation on a number of items that have come to our attention from the Senate side, and I'll ask Senator Newman to make some brief introductory comments, then I'll make some comments, and we'll then turn it over to Commissioner Anderson Kelleher. Chairman Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to, before we get started, I want to thank the Commissioner for agreeing to come in today and talk to us about some issues that are that I believe are of critical importance to us having a successful bill this session. And there I am specifically talking about, there's an issue regarding the CMGC contracts, the project selection process, and the issues surrounding the permissible or impermissible spending out of the Trunk Highway Fund. And those are some issues that have, you know, I think have risen to the forefront and are very, very important. So I really do appreciate the fact that the commissioner has come in and agreed to talk to us today about that. And the whole idea is to try and get some ideas on the table so that we can move forward both with some legislation in this session and then plan for upcoming sessions in the next year. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Newman. And I want to echo my appreciation for Commissioner Anderson Kelleher joining us. And also to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your clarity on perspectives on the issues that you mentioned and the importance of those to you and the Senate. And you know, last Friday, we spent quite a bit of time on an informational basis on one of the items related to transit that's important to the House and to myself. And so I think that we now have, with today's informational hearing, getting everybody up to speed on these priorities. And as you said, Chair Newman, I hope that today can be the basis of some conversation towards resolution of some of these issues, the compromises that are needed in order to move forward and get a bill completed. So, and I'll just say, just before I turn it over to Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, this meeting really came out of a meeting that that we had earlier this week, the chair and I and the commissioner, and we appreciate again that you have some ideas, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, that you want to share with us that, as Chair Newman said, can move us forward towards resolution, whenever that may be. So with that, welcome to the committee, Commissioner, Minnesota Commissioner of Transportation, Margaret Anderson Kelleher. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, good afternoon to the chairman. Thank you very much for having me. I'm Margaret Anderson Kelleher. I serve as the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Today, I would like for everyone to hear a presentation that MnDOT has put together that goes in depth, particularly on project selection. I know this is a big issue in the bill that you are all dealing with, and that issue really is that there, from expressed by Senator Newman and others from time to time, is a concern about how transparent this process is that MnDOT goes through to select projects, how much public involvement there is, both public input, public involvement, and public comment. And then I think we'll touch very briefly on internal processes, because the TPIC issue is tangentially related to this issue. The Transportation Investment Committee inside MnDOT as well. But the main bulk of the presentation will be about project selection, and I hope you can all bear with us as we do this And then I will discuss a little bit of the CMGC issue, the contracting issue, and then a little bit of our perspective and my perspective on the issue of a potential for a general fund swap for trunk highway fund dollars, and what maybe we can come to agreement on there. And so,
Commissioner,
yes,
Commissioner, just before you start, just sorry to interrupt, before you start, I forgot to mention, you know, the Senate, I wanted to let conferees know that, and staff, that the Senate is in session, and should votes come up, we will take a short recess so the senators can vote, and then we will reconvene. So Senator Newman, Chair Newman will let me know when those votes come up. And just again, just in case, you know, we might have some unexpected and quick interruptions here, but I wanted to put everybody on notice that that's a possibility. So again, thank you, and proceed, Commissioner.
All right. And I'm wondering if Senator Jasinski wanted to say something. I saw his hand go, not his virtual hand, but his real hand go up, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I was multitasking on a vote on the floor, so I apologize. But thank you for recognizing me for that.
Well, Mr. Chair, once a presiding officer, always a presiding officer.
She knows how to chair a meeting, I'll tell you.
So thank you, everyone. I'm going to be joined today by my colleague from MnDOT, Patrick Wiedemann, who is going to take you through the project selection process. But we can go to the first slide, the first meaty slide, and we thought it was important to just get everyone on the same page with that. Actually, MnDOT has a family of plans. And the family of plans starts with that Minnesota GO 50-year vision. It then moves into the state multimodal transportation plan. And it has modal and system plans underneath it. And you can see that those are outlined below. The yellow bar indicates the plans that are part of the State Highway Investment Plan, the MNSHIP plan. You can also see a green bar that takes in account the freight system plan, which is very important. Actually, I think has gained some importance in the last few years to point out where we have gaps in our system of freight transport. And I think this slide really shows you that there are a number of things that we take into account at MnDOT as we build these plans. Today, we're really going to focus on the surface transportation plans, really, the mainly vehicle plans. But there's an aviation plan, there's a rail plan, there's a port and waterways plan, there's entirely a freight plan, there's a separate bicycle and pedestrian plan. So I don't want us to lose in this presentation today that there's actually quite a lot of planning that goes on, but we're gonna dive right in, and I can see that Patrick is on the screen. Mr. Chair, if you could have Patrick Wiedemann introduce himself and give his title, that would be great, and we will begin.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher. Mr. Wiedemann, welcome to the conference committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Patrick Wiedemann. I am the Director of Capital Planning and Programming in MnDOT's Office of Transportation System Management. So, thanks, John. I'm going to walk you through how we develop our program. But before we jump there, the commissioner talked about our MNSHIP Highway Investment Plan. The last time we did it was in 2017, and part of our public stakeholder gathering process developed a list of investments that we gave the public and stakeholders an opportunity to prioritize. And these were the top five that came out of the 2017 update. Number one was the condition of our pavements across the state. Number two was our bridge condition across the state. Third is our roadside infrastructure. That's our culverts and other amenities that support the main the pavements. Our regional and community investment priorities, that's the was the fourth investment area. Those are some of the things that we do, major urban reconstructions in a community to add an additional lane and those type of investments. And fifth was traveler safety. And the reason I'm kind of setting that up is because these are important components that come into how MnDOT develops its program of projects. Next slide. So here's where the slides get a little busy, and I'm going to walk you through how all the way from back to when issues are initially identified. So you see on the top the little ovals. Those ovals represent how issues are conveyed into either to MnDOT or from MnDOT's own staff. And to kind of walk you through this, I'm going to point to the center gold oval. Now, throughout these presentation slides, wherever you see yellow ovals or boxes, they represent opportunities where individuals are giving input into MnDOT. And then there's kind of a darker gold. That's where we actually do public comment, which is a little different than public input, because then you're just commenting on decisions that MnDOT is proposing. But these are where actual input comes in. And so for our example, as we walk through this, we're going to start in the middle with a legislative identified issue. And let's assume one of the legislators says, hey, you know, the trunk highway in my district is very rough. MnDOT, I think you should look into that. That issue then gets conveyed to our appropriate district. And the district will look at it either through a planning study or an engineering type evaluation, a more formal look at it, to determine is the issue there and is it a high enough level that it's a need for the system. So assuming that the engineering evaluation comes back and it's a yes, the road is kind of rough, then we move down into the kind of bluish oval. Stay on that slide there, John. The bluish oval is where a district will take that identified issue and go, okay, that road is in rough shape, but you know what? There's a bridge that's adjacent to it. And the district will develop an actual project and say, the project, you know, if we were going to do a project here, it's going to include the road and the bridge together as one project. And the district will do that for all of those issues from all of the bubbles you see above. All of those are coming down and they get identified. Now, to the next orange bubble, the kind of dark orangish bubble, this is where the district will actually begin the process of taking all of those concept type projects and start to assemble them into a selected group of projects that we work on. That's where we truly begin project selection. Now, there are two key factors that come into play with project selection. The left octagon that you see there is, or a hexagon, is a funding availability. That's number one. We have to understand where our funding has come from and how much is available by which, according to each programs. And that's both federal and state. Then on the right is where our priorities come in to work with that funding. And you see at the top there that very dark blue box. It's a state highway investment plan. That's what the commissioner was talking about from the very first slide. That's where the priorities that we set in that plan, which we send over to the legislature for you to review, is driving how we make decisions on projects. In addition to that investment plan, we also ask for public and local agency input. There's that gold rectangle you see there on the right. And finally, MPO policy plans in metropolitan areas. We have to consider the MPO's priorities. And our district staff provide a lot of input. They have a lot of feedback. They live in that area. They understand it. And all of that works together so that the district can basically develop a selection of projects. Those selected projects move down into what we call our 10-year capital highway investment plan. And it's 10 years worth of projects. And as they draft that plan up, the districts go out, they meet with their local counties and cities. They also meet with sometimes just the general public and ask for input into it as to, you know, are they getting the timing right? Oh, maybe a city doesn't want an urban reconstruction in the immediate time because they're concerned they won't be able to have enough money to do underground utility work. The district is asking for that kind of feedback and input. And they are also asking for public comment. So they do both of that at the time they do up the Capital Highway Investment Plan. Before I jump to the next slide, give you an opportunity to ask a question if you want.
Yeah, okay. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Newman.
Thank you. Mr. Wiederman, as I'm looking at your slide on the right-hand side, State Highway Investment Plan, District Staff Input, Public and Local Agency Input, MPO Policy Plans. MPO, I think, involves the metro area. There are corresponding organizations for the rural. They may be ATPs or regional development organizations. Is there input at that level from
yes.
Those organizations outside of the metro? Or am I
Mr.
reading
Wiederman.
Yes, Wiederman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Senator. The gold box public and local agency input is also includes the area transportation partnerships as well as the RDCs. The RDCs are members of the ATPs, so they are critical in helping the district come to some decision on the selection of projects.
Senator, did you have a follow-up, Chair Newman? And then
no,
we'll go to Senator
Jasinski.
Okay. Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, and then we'll go to Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify with the MPOs, the other MPOs in the state include Rochester, Duluth, Mankato, Moorhead, I believe, and maybe St. Cloud now, is that right? And so those are specific to those metropolitan areas, but of course the largest one being the Met Council serving as the metropolitan MPO. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a few more MPOs than even I had thought we had, so thank you for that. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Wiederman. I appreciate the graph and the layout, but one question. So you're telling me the governor, the administration, the commissioner have no input on any projects, according to the slide?
Mr. Wiederman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this particular case, there is input because it's coming through our MINSHIP. Our State Highway Investment Plan is approved by the commissioner, ultimately by the governor, and then actually comes over to the legislature for approval. That document drives a lot of the investment decision-making, particularly in terms of how much we put in preservation versus how much we put to expansion and other investments. In terms of the individual project selection within the district is given the individual guidelines of how to invest, and they do a very good job of managing within those guidelines. Obviously, you'll see later in the process, we do have some check-in points to ensure that that occurs, but you know, our district staff are, you know, they know how important it is to deliver what we say we are gonna deliver, and so they've done a very good job.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Commissioner.
So Mr. Chair, to Senator Jasinski's question. So there are actually three of these slides. We're going to take you through the sort of farthest out into the more close and narrow project delivery piece. But I would say this, that it's interesting you asked that about, you know, a particular governor or legislator or commissioner. I think on this slide, it is harder to see that impact, but I will say that legislators, both in the narrow sense, but also in the most broad sense, do have impact on this slide. Because, for example, the Chapter 152 bonds, which I think we have just completed the last of those Chapter 152 bridges, that happened 15 years ago, that appropriation. It took a few years to get that started. And then that really would have been seen in a slide like this as a priority, that bridges were made a very big priority out of that bill. And it took some time for them to work through. So I think in the broad sense of policy by a governor or a group of legislators, a particular session, that could be seen in this, but it's a little less specific. But I think Mr. Wiedemann will be able to answer your question even more in detail in just a bit.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dzinski. Did you want to proceed, Mr. Wiedemann?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. John, you want to go next slide? So now where we ended at the last slide, we're at the Capital Highway Investment Plan. So we have 10 years of projects now, fiscally, apportioned out to what we expect to get for resources. Then you'll see the little wide arrow that talks about the project development process. Now that we have the projects kind of programmed in, they need to go through a thorough development. And Jay Hippus is going to talk more detailed about that process after I'm done. But that's occurring between years 10 and years 5. As a group of projects begin to move to year 4, the districts begin to develop what we call our draft 4-year Area Transportation Improvement Program. They go out, they work with their ATPs. That's where they're constantly in the fall and the spring meeting with their ATPs. And collecting local government input along with input from the MPOs, who are also doing a transportation improvement program at the same time we are doing our ATIPs, as well as district staff kind of inputting what is the priorities given the current time and location of where we are at in the process. Now, those drafts are developed by the districts and then submitted down to central office. We get 8 of them because we have 8 districts. We assemble them into a draft statewide transportation improvement program, or STIP. You'll note if you've looked at our STIP, there are 8 sections for each of the districts. That's their ATIPs literally incorporated as is. When those come to us, there are some influences that come in. First thing is we have public comment. There's a public comment period after we have developed the draft. We put it out there and online and allow individuals the opportunity to comment. We also, by that point, as you know, I said 4 years out, it's in the middle of your budget forecasts and budget development. We are now pulling those real budget forecast numbers in to ensure that our plan is, in fact, fiscally constrained. At this point is where we do that alignment with MNCHIP. This is what the commissioner was talking about. When the districts submit those projects in, we look at how we stated in MNCHIP we would, in fact, deliver in terms of a program of projects. If there are substantial differences, our leadership will turn the drafts back and say, districts, we are very underserving in bridges. We need to change our mix of programs to get our bridges more in line with what we promised in MNCHIP. And sometimes, we might be not exactly 100% on, but, it might be the fact that we have a couple big bridges coming in that creates that. And so that's all the factors we take and look at when we're pulling together the draft STIP. In addition, we can have some emerging concerns. We might have had a series of floods, and we might have a need for a specific type of project to react to that. Those type of things all come to play as we develop the draft STIP. The draft STIP, after its comment period, and et cetera, goes down for final approval. It is approved first by the commissioner, and then it proceeds over and is reviewed and approved by FHWA and FTA accordingly. At the final approval stage, that occurs usually in October of every year, we do have an opportunity in that interim time till we get to the final. Sometimes we have new federal grants that get awarded between now and then, and we need to try and get them into the final STIP. As well as a lot of times that is occurring after you have had a legislative session. And so we'll try and, if we had a new program or a new legislative direction come in, we'll try and sneak those into the final as well. Any questions on this before I move to my third slide? Okay.
Questions, okay. Members? Okay, you can move on to your third slide, Mr. Wiedemann.
Okay. So starting again at the top, we have the final approved STIP. And for now, members, I'd like you to focus on the brown boxes in the vertical. We'll get to the blue ones in a minute. The brown boxes represent the STIP is a 4-year STIP. In the first year, in the out years of year 4 and 3 of the STIP, we a lot of times could have federal bill changes. The Congress may reauthorize the bill, and that will change the type of programs or the amount of funding we get. So in years 3 and 4, we can have some project changes in particular that happens based upon some federal bill changes. As we move to years 2 and 1 inside of the program, we have, a lot of times that's when federal grants get awarded. They will get an announcement and we'll need to put that project into the STIP because they're required to be in the STIP if they're going to use federal funds. We also now know, you know, your sessions are complete. We know exactly how much approved budget we have. And so we have to tweak the STIP to make sure that we are staying fiscally constrained. Finally, we move down to the first year of our program or projects. And at, for the most part, that stays pretty constant with one minor exception. We do have the addition of a few more projects that occur as a result of, on this slide, it's called seasonal impacts. If we have an exceptionally bad winter and we have a lot of road breakup, the districts will add emergency overlay type projects to the program in an effort to keep the system held together. So that's sort of the track that goes down. Now on the right side,
Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Commissioner.
So I think it's good to give an example of that seasonal impact. So last year, there was some significant flooding again in South Central Minnesota, and Highway 99 had a sudden washout of a culvert. So that is a good example of the type of project that, you know, we might have been planning some work on Highway 99, but suddenly we were doing that project because we could not leave that road closed and needed to actually replace the culvert. I think I'm getting that right. It was between Le Sueur County and Scott County.
Okay, thank you for that example. Mr. Wiedemann, did you want to proceed?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I'll move over to the right. And the reason I've put this on here, these are the final steps in the project development process. Now, there are a lot of steps that are also occurring ahead of this, but these final steps are occurring as the projects are put into the STIP. And the reason I've specifically added them, you see the two yellow boxes. Even though the program of projects itself is beginning to take shape and et cetera, we still have input that's occurring on the project level. And that input can actually impact the project, which ultimately may change the program of projects, depending on, you know, if it results in a project needing to slip back and do more work, or if the scope of the project changes. And so there are adjustments that come into play as a project moves all the way down. I've also kind of put those boxes approximately where they would fall in terms of time.
Excuse me, Mr. Wiedemann. Representative Petersburg has a question.
Yeah, thank you. You just talked about scope of project. So I am curious, you know, what if a project, either through legislative process or what you're developing, does the size of the project have an impact into the adjustments and movement of projects from one, maybe up one level or down one level just because of the size, or how is that affected?
Mr. Wiedemann.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I'm actually going to hold off on answering your question just for a little bit. Following what I've given you is going to be Jay Hippus, our Assistant Commissioner of Operations, and he can walk you through exactly your question.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me.
Chairman Newman.
Mr. Chairman, could we have a five-minute recess, please?
Thank you, Chair Newman. We are going to be in recess for 5 minutes, approximately 1:40 p.m. Or when the senators return. So thank you. We are in recess, members.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, well, let's hear from Mr. Hippus.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committees. My name is Jay Hippus, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Operations for MnDOT. I'm going to take you through how our project kind of goes from that concept stage or identification stage all the way down through actually getting it out to bids and into construction. So if we can go to the next slide, please. I broke things up into two different sections. You see, I'll be referencing the top light blue box and the bottom blue box. So the top blue box is basically projects that have been identified, but they're probably still about 4 to 6 years away.
Actually getting it out to bids and into construction.
Getting a little bit of feedback.
We can go to the next slide, please. I broke things up into two different sections. You see, I'll be representing.
Oops, can you hear me?
I think we're getting some audio feedback.
Oh, can you hear me now clearly?
That's much better, Mr. Hippus. Proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in that first phase of the light blue box, this is more of a fact finding, and I'll walk you through a typical bridge project. So as Patrick mentioned earlier, there may be a need identified for a bridge where that bridge is now nearing the end of its life. It may be 60 years old. And we say, yep, the bridge is coming due. Now we start entering that scoping phase. So we're looking at, well, do we need to replace the bridge or can we rehab the bridge? What are the safety issues around the bridge? What about the roadway elements leading up to it, the signing, the lighting? So really kind of doing that fact finding. Then we're also looking at the environmental impacts around it. Are we near wetlands? Are we near some contaminated material properties? What are some of the business impacts? So really doing that fact finding and gathering, but not making a final determination at this point, just getting that information and having a general idea of where we want to go to advance that project to the next step. So at that point, we then set a schedule and a preliminary budget for that project. This is when it kind of moves from that chip that Patrick talked about more into the STIP. So as that bridge project now moves into the bottom two rows, the darker blue boxes, now we start doing some more preliminary design and our engineers start getting involved with exactly how far how wide is the bridge going to be and how far out are the right-of-way impacts going to go. And we do a lot at this time, public engagement and municipal consent. So we often have different alternatives for that bridge. For example, we may say, do we want to build the bridge in the exact same spot? Or do we need to build a bridge next to the existing bridge? Do we build it on the left side? Do we build it on the right side? Is it now a two-lane bridge or is it a four-lane bridge? So this is where we start having those iterative processes with the public. So we go out through open houses, we have public hearings, we have one-on-one with property owners, we meet with small community groups, we do a lot of surveys. Sometimes we have design charrettes where the citizens can come in and help us shape what it actually looks like for some of the aesthetic details. But that's a little bit of an iterative process that takes time. And the larger the project and the more complex, the longer those processes take. Especially with the environmental document. For an environmental document, each one of those alternatives needs to get looked at. So if we're going to build it in the exact same place, what are the environmental impacts? If we build it to the left, now we have to do that same assessment on that alternative. If we do it to the right side, same assessment on those alternatives. So all those take time and effort. And they really, you're trying to just balance all the different aspects for that project. So a large project will take many, many, many years. And there's different levels of environmental documents. A simpler project like a mill and overlay, that environmental document is relatively easy. We're not really disturbing any of the ground outside the roadway surface. That can be completed within 6 months to a year. But some of these big environmental impact statements will take many, many, many years to complete. Once we've then gone through those alternatives and identified a preferred alternative and say, yep, we've looked at the different options and we've decided we're going to build the bridge to the left of the new bridge. Now we start moving down to that bottom line. And that's where we start looking at the final design. So really doing those detailed engineering drawings so our contractors are able to bid on the project. And at that point, we've identified what the right-of-way needs are along that corridor. So we start going out and doing the appraisals and the negotiation with the property owners, and those can take many years. Once those two items are complete, the design is complete and the right-of-way is secured, then we can actually go and put those open to bids for the contractors. So we'll have the bid opening that takes typically 2 months for the contracts to get signed, and then we start construction. So we say up to 4 years and say that that depends exactly on that complexity of project. So that could be longer than 4 years if you're going through a large iteration process with the community and that environmental document gets to be really complex. You know, one example is the Stillwater Bridge, very, very complex area, very, very complex environmental document. It takes years to get through that process.
Mr.
Any
Chair,
questions on this slide? Go ahead.
Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to, you know, I like when we have a real life example that maybe we've all experienced or most of us have experienced together. Last year, when we went down to Henderson to talk about the Henderson flood project, and Senator Newman, I think you remember this well, there was someone there who was unhappy with the alternative study, even though the city council had voted for the preferred alignment. And so that's a really good example of the type of things that, you know, we work through at that process, where that project, that flood project, it had to go through an alternative study. And we, you know, we listened very carefully to the citizens who, you know, and you did too, listened very carefully to those citizens who wanted to see something different happen there. And I think that's a really fine example of working through the complex alternatives that we might face on a project, getting to a recommended actual project.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Hippus.
Are there any other questions on this slide, Mr. Chair? Then I'll proceed to the next slide.
I don't see any. So you can proceed.
All right, to the next slide, please. We looked at all the projects that are being considered in different bills. Oh, John, if you could proceed to the next slide and try to look at, are they in that darker blue line, the bottom? Are they really getting ready for construction? Are they still in that feasibility stage? Of that list, we identified three projects that are in the early phases of getting ready to go to construction. So several of these are in the environmental documentation stage. So they have not quite hit the final design stage, but these projects here are within that window of getting ready for construction. They're along that more detailed path.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, before Mr. Hippus goes to the next slide.
Commissioner.
So I think it's important to note that when we say environmental documentation, this is where the Office of Environmental Stewardship comes into play. They are the office who are working with the districts, as well as anyone at central office, in terms of these environmental reviews directly related to the delivery of projects.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just to expound.
Mr. Hippus.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to expound upon the environmental documentation, there are state processes we have to follow for state projects, and there are also federal processes we have to follow for federally funded projects. And when we do get legally challenged on a project, it is typically through the environmental documentation phase. So there is a very critical stage to make sure we have everything in alignment for that project. All right, there's no additional questions. I'll go to the next slide. These are all the other projects that are in those potential bills. And you can see they're falling in that lighter blue box. So they are still many years away from construction. Many are in that feasibility stage, not exactly sure if we're going to build a diamond interchange or a single point diamond interchange, or if we're going to be expanding a roadway. So very, very, very early on. So these projects still need to have a lot of work done before they're actually even ready to go to construction. Many of these, it will take several years. Some of the bills are going to get these projects from the light blue phase into the darker blue phase, but just that first level of preliminary engineering, public engagement, environmental documents. They still have a long ways to go with right-of-way acquisition, final design, before they're actually ready to go out to bid. Any questions or comments on this slide?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this could be for Mr. Hippus or the commissioner, but you know, this is where I begin to struggle a little bit. Just as example, I know in the previous slide you had Highway 8, on that particular list, and I know for a fact that that particular project has been hanging around for a very long time. I look at this slide, and the two that really, you've got them grouped right together, Highway 212, Norwood Young America, and the land bridge for Rondo. Land bridge for Rondo, in, I believe, is a pretty new project. And 212 to New Norwood Young America, that's been around for years. How, see, that's where I begin to struggle, where I think it was Representative Petersburg put it best. We've got projects that have been around for 30 years on the 20-year project list. So, I really do appreciate the breakdown of, you know, the slides that you're going through. But at some point, we're going to have to get to the crux of the question. And that is whether or not MnDOT is politely listening to public input and public comments, or whether they are actually listening to people and advancing those projects. And if they're not ready to go, for instance, Highway 212, we've been talking about that since I got into transportation, and it's still stuck in the same place. Therein lies my frustration.
So Mr. Anderson Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, I hear your frustration on this. I want to be clear that what this slide indicates is that there's a range of years of readiness to where the project might move into the next phase. Obviously, we just had a groundbreaking on one phase of 212 last week, and that you might think of as, and there's dirt being turned out there. I was in that cornfield. It was a beautiful sight, right? That project is moving forward. This is really the next phase of that project. And my hunch is with more planning, environmental review, and some resources, this project could move forward. But it does have to go through the other steps, and we do have to have the resources available, whether they are a local resource, a state resource, or a federal resource to be able to deliver that project. Now, the land bridge is here because the land bridge in Rondo, in the Rondo neighborhood, has been talked about for a number of years now, but only in concept. And it is certainly on the further out portion of that 4 to 10 years, because there would need to be funding assembled. We as MnDOT would really proceed with a land bridge in conjunction with the Rethinking I-94 project, which is the rehabilitation project of I-94 between the two cities. So just because they appear in the 4 to 10 year list, we're not commenting here on, you know, which one is in the 4 to 6 year range or which one's in the 10 year range. I think when we had our conversation, it was important, we identified that it was important to identify where these projects were in kind of those two big buckets. And the two big buckets are that, how close are we in that 1 to 4 year range, and how, which projects are in the 4 to 10 year range? You raise very good points. I think I could wrap back into Senator Jasinski's question here. What seems to be sometimes maybe influence of a project being moved forward, I can promise you that projects like Highway 14 had been on that 50-year list, had been on the 20-year list, and it really was a matter of the phases of the project and figuring out the funding to be able to get the project done. It is not that someone, you know, you had asked, does a commissioner choose a project? I, in my 2.5 years, no one has allowed me to choose a project, I promise you. What they come to me with is, we have a problem, Commissioner. Can you help us solve a problem? And usually the problem is related to anything from funding to working with a local community, but it is definitely not a project selection job. So I want to share that because I think we would be remiss if we did not tell you that the commissioner is not choosing the projects. The projects, if there are projects moved around between 20 years, 10 years, and 4 years, it is because of the changes that you saw in Mr. Wiedemann's slides about where we might have a funding opportunity. A community applies for an infra grant and they get it. A community applies for a Corridors of Commerce grant, they win it. That can often change where the order of the projects are, but it's not, it is not as direct to an individual, for sure.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Commissioner, I won't belabor the point, but as I look at this list of projects that are between 4 and 10 years out, I do recognize a number of them that have been hanging around for a long time. And I am simply using the 212 as an example rather than going through the entire list. And I know for a fact that the 212 project has two different parts to it. And the groundbreaking portion that you are referring to that happened about a week ago. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there because I was, you know, on the floor and so forth. But I know that there's two parts to that project. Both parts have been around for a long, long time. And I simply don't understand the delay in moving these projects forward. And if why doesn't MnDOT respond to the people like out in Carver County? I mean, they have been screaming for this for years. Why isn't MnDOT providing them with the necessary information as to how do we move this project forward? And it is very frustrating because you got a beautiful slideshow here. And it reflects public input, public comments. But there's a breakdown in communication here, I'm afraid, Commissioner.
I'll have Commissioner Anderson Kelleher respond, and then we're going to get to Representative Petersburg, Representative Jasinski, and Representative Elkins. I think, Chair Newman, you've kind of opened up an avenue for some discussion here. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Anderson Kelleher.
So, Mr. Chair, I want to point out, and I appreciate Senator Newman's point, the 212 projects are actually now locally led and have been locally led. I think that indicates a listening to the local community. The local county board, the county board has made a decision about what to prioritize with a combination, and we have met them in the first phase of that project in terms of resources to be able to proceed with the project. And we are now working with them to figure out the next phase of the project in terms of funding. The example being that there are some resources available that they did not need on phase one. They have asked, Commissioner, can those dollars be moved to phase two? That is what I have been working on with our team, with Mr. Hippus and others, to figure out. I'm not being disagreeable. I want to be clear. I'm trying to understand how 212 phase one right now and the work that we are doing with the local community on phase two would not indicate a listening to the community.
Commissioner,
it might be a rhetorical question.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And we're going to get to then our next three hands, and then we'll move on to the next slide after that. Representative Petersburg, then followed by Representative Jasinski, and I'm sorry, Senator Jasinski. I keep calling you Representative. Senator Jasinski and Representative Elkins. I was one step ahead looking at Representative Elkins there. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this discussion kind of leads to the question that I had a little bit earlier, which is the size and scope of some projects make it very difficult to accomplish in 1 year, and wondering how that impacted everything. And what I will tell you is my perception on how A14 kept sliding down the list, at least in my view, was that it became a project that was worthwhile and everybody wanted to do. However, it wasn't able to be done because of the resources all in one shot. So a little bit of it was done, whatever was could afford it. Unfortunately, then as that project came to the list again, because some of it had been done, it never rose to the level of having more priority for it. And I think that's where a lot of these projects are, is that we know that they need to be done. We start the project, but because we've done some of the project, then all of a sudden it doesn't have the same urgency to get finished. And I think that's where we lack the continuity and the follow through. When we put something on a 20-year plan or whatever, as we finish pieces, it keeps falling back down into lower levels of importance. And so I think that's one of the areas that we should also look at, is how do we keep projects that we said was important to finish, to keep going towards their finishment, and rather than just doing in stages and they never quite get done. And so I think that's maybe some of the other frustration that we have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Why don't we take the comments, and do you want to, should we do them one by one, Commissioner, or do you want to respond, or then we can get to Senator Jasinski?
Why don't we have Senator Jasinski with his question, and then we'll come back around, because of course, Highway 14 is now in its completely funded stage, but it did take some extraordinary work to get that done on the financing side of things and the help of the legislature as well.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Madam Commissioner, thank you. So my question is a little bit along the same lines, and let me say, by first of all, I'm very happy with the progress of 14, and I'm happy to see both ends getting done, or potentially being done. But as far as the graphs you have set up in the slides, so explain, you know, I saw the input on Highway 14. We went through the Corridors of Commerce program. It got ranked and all those things. But I would say the western edge that just happened after the other one, how did that fall into the slides that you showed? Because it was kind of not normal the way it got done, and it was kind of a last minute deal. And I didn't see how that's explained in here of that progress with the western, the New Ulm section.
Good question,
Senator Jasinski and Commissioner Anderson Kelleher.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Jasinski, I will go in the way back machine to the summer of 2019, when I had a meeting with the Build America Bureau out of the Federal Highway Administration. And when I had that meeting, they were here in Minneapolis, actually. They were here for an AASHTO national meeting. And when they mentioned this rural financing program, they actually have a more broad financing program, but they mentioned that they have a rural financing program. And I went back to the folks at MnDOT and said, why haven't we used this program? And they said, well, the interest rate usually is above the interest rate that the state can get on the capital bonds. Okay, fair enough. We did some more research, and what happened is the
I think you may be frozen, Commissioner. I don't know if you can hear us. It's like, I know Mr. Pippas, is there a way to fill in? I don't know if you can finish the commissioner's thought here. Or...
Mr. Chair, this is why we need more broadband.
Okay, well.
Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I can try to finish her thought.
Okay, Mr. Rudin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudin, MnDOT Government Affairs. And I think the commissioner was describing the Build America Bureau with the Federal Highway Administration. And in 2019, they created a new category for rural projects with an interest rate that was below market rate. And so that was really the first time we became aware that it might actually be financially advantageous for the state to participate in that program. And so we looked to see whether we would have authority to participate, and there actually was some existing language in statute, but after checking with MMB, it was determined that we needed to sort of beef up that language. And so that was the legislation that you remember we were able to enact shortly before the legislature, kind of put their operations on hiatus last March. Again, it hadn't been financially smart for the state to participate in the program before, because we could always get a lower interest rate just selling a trunk highway bond rather than taking a loan through that.
Mr. Rudin, I think Commissioner Anderson Kelleher is back on. I do remember very well what you're describing. That was the last floor session we had in the House in March 2020 until very recently. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry about the frozen internet. You can see that even in Minneapolis, you can have bad internet connections. More broadband, everyone. So I think, Senator Jasinski, the other piece of this story is that section, the western section, Nicollet to New Ulm, had been making its way through the district planning process, and was finally at the point where it would enter into that between year four and year three, but for funding. And so there had been a lot of work done with the local community, with the Highway 14 Coalition, with the towns and along that route to figure out the proper alignment. And so what seems like something that, suddenly we're dealing with, it's because we found a way to bring some additional resources to the table to do the project. I will say that right now there's a restriction on us using that resource, that rural Build America fund, beyond Highway 14. It is possible that we could utilize that for some of the other projects on either the list where there are the three are probably all metro projects, but any of the rural projects could potentially be candidates. But right now there's that restriction.
Okay, let's move on here. We have some more ground to cover today, and we're already here at a little after two. So I want to make sure that we can get our agenda in. So Representative Elkins.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I was having trouble finding the unmute button there for a second. So I just, would like to, I'll lend a little bit of kind of a temporal perspective to this discussion. My very first public service role was as a member of the City of Bloomington's Traffic and Transportation Committee, which I was appointed, I believe, in 1995. And on the 3 or 4 years that I was a member of that body, I distinctly remember that one of the first items that we were presented with was the approval of the environmental impact statement for the expansion of Interstate 494 on the Bloomington Strip. That EIS was approved, I think, in around 1998, And it, of course, passed its 10-year expiration date way before any funding was ever identified to do that project. But the cities that are members of the 494 Corridor Commission, which I've long been associated with, advocated for that project for literally 25 years until finally the project was able to secure opportunistic funding through the Corridors of Commerce project. And similarly, I have been working on what we're now calling the Orange Line BRT in the 35W corridor for about as long. I still remember writing a letter to my then Met Council member, former representative and former mayor Neil Peterson, suggesting that Bloomington ought to build a transit-oriented development in the Southtown area along the bus rapid transit line that even in the late 90s was a line and a dot on the map. And finally, our first big opportunity to secure a chunk of that came along in 2010. I happened to be the chair of the National League of Cities Transportation Committee that year and became aware of a project called the Urban Partnership Agreement, recognized that this could be a vehicle for the I-35W Solutions Alliance to get funding for a big down payment on the MinPass and what eventually has become the Orange Line. And we got a big down payment on that through winning a grant through the Urban Partnership Agreement. And only now, again, through Corridors of Commerce, are we also securing the funding we need to reconstruct the 35W 494 interchange. That project has been on the roadmap for almost 25 years. There's just not enough funding. And whether it's the Highway 14 Coalition or the 35W Solutions Alliance or the North Metro Mayors Association, we're all in the same situation where we've got projects that are showing up on slides like the one that's in front of us, but we may not have funding for it for another 20 years. And the only way we resolve this bottleneck is putting more funding into the system so that we don't have to wait for these opportunistic programs like Urban Partnership Agreement or Corridors of Commerce or the borrowing program that the commissioner just described in order to get these things off of the list that's in front of us and onto a 1 to 4 year list. We need more money into the system. Wednesday morning, I attended a meeting of the 494 Corridor Commission where April Crockett, our MnDOT area administrator, walked us through the MinPass plan for that corridor. We're right in the middle of that final planning, and there's still not enough money to complete the project. So one of the big discussions we're having at the local level with all of the local elected officials involved is how we stage the project, which parts of the project need to be done first. We're all in this particular boat. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Elkins, for sharing that. I did not know your history with the Urban Partnership Agreement, which I carried the legislation with on that. So nice little connection here. Okay, members, we are going to move on here with the presentation, and then we'll wrap up hopefully here in a few minutes because we would like to move on to Trunk Highway Fund issues, contracting, and other matters. So proceed, Mr. Ippes.
Oh, Jay, you're...
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my last slide. I'll be very brief. It's a kind of an overview of what we just talked about. When a project is going from that very, very conceptual idea stage to get to construction, those larger expansion projects are in that 10 to 20 year window, depending on getting through all the processes and getting the funding all aligned. The preservation type projects are in that typical 6 to 10 year window for an idea to construction. And then those seasonal response ones are a little bit quicker, depending on if the impacts are light. If we have to get right away in those seasonal impacts, it may take a little bit longer, but those are more of a quicker response. So just wanted to give you some general timeframes on size and scale of different projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ippes. Thank you. Okay, I'm
Mr. Chair?
If, Yes, Commissioner.
I have more to continue on with. I have the...
Yes.
I think what is a proposal for the conference committee, Mr. Chairman, that relates to the presentation that you've just had.
This is important, members. So this is, you know, this is what we're hoping we can move forward on or, you know, have questions on. So proceed, Commissioner, and I appreciate the thought you put into this.
So, Mr. Chairman and members of the conference committee, I can see there's a lot of energy around the questions of how projects get onto the list, how they get selected, who does MnDOT listen to in getting these projects onto a list or funded. And so I think that something that has, you know, kind of bubbled up in hearing this conversation is that I was a member of Senator Kiffmeyer's vehicle registration task force 2 years ago. It was a task force that did very important work. Some of you were members of that task force as well. We examined issues such as, should we have a weight-based system of registration? Can we look at other ways of registering vehicles in the state? What makes sense? It was at the very same time that I feel bad saying the name because I feel like it's one of those things you shouldn't say anymore, but MNLARS was phasing out and the FAST product was coming online and was actually being built out. And I personally found it to be a really terrific task force to hear from stakeholders, to hear from the folks who at that time were building the model. MnDOT provided the support on the finance side of that task force. So we were very involved. I would suggest that we actually need a project selection task force and that would be something that would have legislators, stakeholders, to be able to look and study trunk highway selection, make recommendations to improve transparency in the process, make suggestions about public input to the process. We would examine those state and federal requirements, the current public input and public comments, and be able to look at those key decision points. Wrapping into that, may I suggest that we would wrap two other issues into this that have been important to the legislature, both this year and in previous years, the review of the Corridors of Commerce program, which might be able to be a subcommittee coming back with recommendations to this group and really diving deep into it. And then the other issue is the issues that Senator Newman has raised around the internal MnDOT Committee on Resource Allocation called TPIC. And that this be set up through the legislation this year, through the conference committee, and be able to report back by, I'm suggesting February 15th, but we certainly could talk about what the appropriate date is. So I think that a project selection task force would help us even look maybe at some other states as well and the processes they use to be able to get, you know, really better understanding, but also better input.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there questions about this idea? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of agree with the fact that we should have some additional task force work on this. My question is, earlier I had suggested something like that for the Corridors of Commerce program, but was told that unless it was in either one of the bills, we as a conference committee couldn't set up a task force. Did we get clarification on that?
That was a question I had, and I did check in with Mr. Burris about that. And Mr. Burris, did you want to, I think I'll have you answer Representative Petersburg's question.
Mr. Chair and members, there is a joint rule that restricts creation of a task force or similar body that has legislative membership in it. One thing to note is if the final agreements and development of budget legislation occurs in a special session, then the process would be something different than what would come out of this conference committee. So, you know, potentially that would be one scenario where newly introduced legislation reflecting agreement between the House and Senate and the executive branch, you know, would be in special session would be something that starts from scratch. But as far as this conference committee, there is a joint rule where, you know, there could be an issue raised around establishing a new task force directly. There are a couple of other potential scenarios for this conference committee as well that could also be investigated further if you wanted to get into the details on that.
So, thank you, Mr. Burris. Representative Petersburg.
So do I understand that if we end the session without an agreement, that the bills will go back to each respective body? That body then could make some amendments to it before it comes back to conference committee, in which this might be something that's possible. Is that my understanding?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, a special session of the legislature would be something of a blank slate. It would be new bills that would be introduced. And so, you know, at that point, a bill could be introduced that reflected the entirety of an agreement, or the legislature could choose to go through, you know, another round of the legislative process of introducing a bill, moving it through the committees, and then going into conference. So through either of those types of scenarios, it would be open territory as to what would be included in the proposal. And, you know, that could include this task force or you know, something along these lines.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Peters, we'll maybe touch on this towards the end of the meeting today, Senator Newman and I. But in the event there's a special session, I don't know, but in the event there's a special session, we will kind of review the status of the conference committee, the status of the items that we have already voted on, and kind of where we go from here in the process, just in case, you know.
Understood.
Okay, I don't see any additional questions. I guess I have one, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, thanks, Senator Bingham has her hand.
Oh, what's that? I'm sorry. Oh, Senator Bingham, I didn't see
Your hand.
It's kind of camouflaged with your picture back there. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, does this have anything, I mean, would the task force, too, maybe this is for Commissioner Kelleher, but would this have any ability to also review any of the federal guidelines for any one-time money that would be coming either through the recovery funds or the bill that Congress and Secretary Buttigieg is going to be putting together? Would there be space to talk a little bit about that in this task force?
Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, excellent question.
Mr. Chair, I feel like I should say that's above my pay grade in this negotiation. Certainly, if leaders who are negotiating want to include different items or additional items into this, they could. I will say that because of the slides that you saw that Mr. Wiedemann walked us through, there was there's a couple particular areas where federal programming and federal dollars can come into play. And certainly through that lens, we could examine what's happening either with the one-time ARP funds, if some should become available to transportation, or looking at what else is coming federally, because there's both the infrastructure bill, the American Jobs Plan bill, and there is the possibility, and really we hope as a DOT, the promise of reauthorization of the Surface Transportation Act done by this fall. It's been delayed out now, I think, more than 18 months because Congress could not act. So I would say that, you know, having some boundaries on this task force is important for it to be able to do what the legislature would want it to do in terms of public involvement and public process and project selection. And so putting too many things in the stew can just make the stew kind of a mess. But the right number of ingredients can obviously be a delicious thing to dive
into. A hot dish. Mr. Chair, I have one more question.
Senator Bingham.
Thank you. And I know you just used that stew analogy, so this may now not make, you know, may just defer to that answer. But I'm sure you've heard that I have a I really want to focus on bus rapid transit, and I really feel that bus rapid transit is built on, you know, highways, roads, and bridges that are existing. I feel like that is probably better set for your department. I'm not asking you to weigh in on my very important bill to me, Commissioner, but I'm wondering if there would be an opportunity in this task force to maybe take a look at how bus rapid transit would work in that atmosphere. I mean, I guess between federal money, between the fact that it's on existing guideways and highways, that maybe it's a good area to have that discussion, not about maybe removing it from Metro Transit in such a public way that, or Met Council in such a public way that my proposed legislation does, but maybe it creates the space to kind of have that conversation about truly where the building and planning and design should go for the future.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, I think I'll answer Senator Bingham's question this way, to say that there's a lot of cooperation and coordination work that goes on already on any BRT project, particularly those guideway or highway-based BRT projects. MnDOT staff is already involved. And, you know, exploring how that happens and at what level is certainly something that, you know, we could discuss further.
Senator Bingham.
No, that's it. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, I had one question, Commissioner, and before we move on, and let me thank you for your thinking through on this, and it's definitely something that the committee will consider. Where would your proposal that you're putting forward here, and I know you have additional slides, so maybe this might address that, but you know, there are a number of specific highway requests in the Senate bill, and where would this how would this proposal interact with that request that's on the table now? You know, because I know that's one. I mean, I think this is a great idea for next year, and I'm sure that we would be able to, as a committee, I'm sure the issue report and recommendations would have recommendations for the legislature. And so I think that would really move things along or provide clarity where there is none. But what about what's before us now? What do you have some thoughts about that?
So, Mr. Chairman, and to the members of the committee, I think that obviously this task force on project selection kind of helps us answer some very big questions and maybe make some legislative agreed upon changes or suggestions for next year that the legislature would move through. On the project list, MnDOT, I think it's no surprise to anyone on this committee, would say we prefer to not have things done as earmarks or constituent requests specifically. However, last year we were able to work together to develop a project development fund in the capital investment bill. And that project development fund done with trunk highway bonds was, we were able to advance seven projects, six of them actually locally led, that are moving to their moving up through environmental documentation, which is, as you heard from both Mr. Wiedemann and Assistant Commissioner Hippis, a key marking point for a project to be ready to receive funding and move into the final phases where it would go out for bid. And so I think that there are some of those, you know, I know there were a lot of projects on the 4 to 10 year list. However, some of them are more ready than others to receive funding to get through the environmental documentation stage. And so working with members of the committee to identify how many are in that range, I don't have that number today, but I'm certain we could if we had, if your committee had the resources available through either trunk highway cash, where it's a trunk highway project and MnDOT led, or some sort of either general fund dollars, maybe some of the federal dollars are maybe a possibility here to develop a corollary cash project development fund. Versus what we did last year in October, which was very much focused on the capital bonding program. And so that is something that I think, you know, that was frankly an innovation that came out of the work on the Capital Investment Committee. I think it's an innovation that MnDOT feels is worthy of working with again. And particularly if there could be a corollary, not only for the trunk highway type projects, but also something for local communities, because we are seeing that more and more, as Senator Newman mentioned, you know, Carver County is leading the project on 212. They were the lead agency. We saw Scott County lead on Highway 41 and 169. So I think we see Anoka County leading in the Highway 10 corridor. I think there's a number of places here where we can find a way to advance projects. We would call those getting the projects ready for the shelf, ready to receive the funding, what we can kind of see, the opportunistic funding that might be coming to be able to move forward. So, Mr. Chair, I hope that helps. I think it's something that, you know, it was really a great innovation last time. And like I said, six of the seven projects there were also locally led, and we were able to work very successfully with those local, mainly counties, to figure out the allocation of that $25 million.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to pour over here in your answer, and I appreciate it.
It's Carla.
Senator Bingham.
I couldn't agree more with the commissioner. I can't tell you how many times on my tenure on the county board that the county was like, you know, MnDOT, we can hurry this up if you just kind of partner with us and do this because we know you're really backlogged. And they figure it out and they work together and they have a great relationship with counties. And counties, I think, honestly, prefer to have some of that control over it. It's quite honestly. And so then they can determine the traffic diversion plans and all of that that are important to quality of life issues in some of these roads and especially in rural areas where there's farms, you know, even in Washington County, it gets a little depending on the timing. And then you've got MnDOT going, we got to get this project done. We can't disrupt it, but the county can have a little bit more flexibility. So I really like that approach.
Okay. Well, thank you, Senator Bingham. And I appreciate, you know, you have that local government experience, which is so helpful and valuable in this, particularly in this context. So let me just wrap up, and I know that we have got, I think, two or three more slides, but just before we leave this task force proposal and the comments you made, Commissioner, I appreciate your willingness to, you know, consider some of these items that are in the Senate bill, you know, with some criteria. I think we're going to really need to roll up our sleeves and really dig into, you know, each of these projects and where they're at and where they stand. And I know in the past you've talked about a development fund of sorts that we've had in earlier other legislation. So I do feel there are some possibilities here in addition to the task force idea. And, you know, I just think we're going to need to really work through that, look at some criteria and figure out how best to address, I think, what seems to be and is, I know, not seems to be, I know is quite important to the Senate. And, you know, I'm willing to try to figure out some ways to move us forward, create some room and space for some compromise and forward movement here. So I appreciate your entertaining that idea. Okay, did you want to move on or comment?
Yes.
Yeah, let's get going.
Mr. Chair, happy to move on. So one of the other differences between the House bill and the Senate bill is an update to a piece of legislation that passed a number of years ago, often shorthanded as CMGC, Construction Manager General Contractor. And this is a contracting tool that MnDOT has had the permission of the legislature to use for a little under 10 years now. That came with some stipulation that we have a cap of 10 projects during that time, that there be a series of reports that would report back to the legislature on how the program is going, as well as a cap on the number of these projects that we could use this particular contracting tool on, CMGC, and that's been four projects in a calendar year. Mr. Chair, the House has we have two projects left under the 10 cap that was approved a number of years ago. So we have only two more projects left to go until we hit the ceiling and the cap. The House has 10 additional projects to add to that, adding 12. The Senate did not include this provision in their bill. It is an important provision to MnDOT. It comes along with our other traditional contracting tools, design bid build, design build, best value, to give Minnesotans really the most bang for their buck in our ability to deliver with contractors projects on time, and to do it in a way that also can mitigate risk. This tool, CMGC, which is used nationally in a number of other states by their DOTs, really helps to mitigate risk in the most complex projects that we might have available to look at in a year. And so it's a case where MnDOT is working collaboratively with the designer, the builder, and the stakeholders to design and develop a plan to meet the project goals and avoid some of the pitfalls that can lead to schedule delays and increased costs. This process is really exclusively something that we decide for the contracting tool on the most complex projects. So next slide, John, if you would. We know there's been some concern about the program by some contractors. I personally have engaged with a number of contractors over the last 2 weeks and the Association of General Contractors. And I think we have come upon some areas of agreement where we can make some changes. So first of all, there's a concern that the early cost estimates that MnDOT puts out with the RFPs are really not complete. They are our best idea of what this project is going to cost. The very reason we choose to use the CMGC process is because there often is a wide range and high uncertainty. So you are seeing on the picture the Highway 53 relocation in Virginia. This was a CMGC project. This is the Rukavina Bridge. And when you look at this project from above, you can see, I think, pretty well the complexity of what we were doing here. We were actually moving the highway to then traverse the pit. And it is the tallest bridge in the state. It had some very significant challenges in its relocation. This was a perfect CMGC project. High complexity. We're probably never doing this type of project again. But yet we want to be able to deliver it with good value for the public. So we can go to the next slide. So one of the challenges has been that we will change how we refer to what right now is referred to as a project budget and really come up with new terminology that gets at that, that it's a project estimate at the point of the CMGC RFP, because we know there are going to be changes to that budget. It is not a hard and fast budget in design build, and often in design build, we end up with a lot of change orders and can have, other elements of the contract that have to be revisited. We will also eliminate one of the concerns of contractors is that the evaluation criteria currently has a question or space for previous CMGC procurement experience by the contractor. We are going to eliminate that. The idea is that we actually want more contractors to be able to be a CMGC contractor in the state. And the way to do that is for them to demonstrate that they have worked on complex projects, working together with MnDOT, working together with other contractors to be problem solvers. That's really what that was trying to get at. I think sometimes the literal read of what was there would give the impression that you could not qualify as a CMGC contractor in the state of Minnesota unless you had CMGC contracting experience. That is not what we want to have happen. We actually want to grow the pool of those who are able to bid on these projects. We also commit to, MnDOT will commit to outreach and training with partners, including the Association of General Contractors on CMGC specifically. And I do know that I think that our leader, one of our leaders on this issue, is on the conference today. If you had questions about that, about what kind of outreach we might do, we've already had some conversations with AGC about that. And then as a way to show that we are not going to wildly grow this program, we would drop the number of projects allowable in a year from 4 to 3, because I think that is another important piece of what I have been hearing from contractors who have concerns. They don't want to see the entire MnDOT construction budget taken up with CMGC contracts, because it is one tool. That is not MnDOT's intent, and I want to say that here. But one of the ways to signal that to everyone is we can drop that number down to 3 per year. We have typically been using the tool 1 to 2 times a year. And the Winona Bridge you see on the slide was also another successful CMGC contract. delivered, you know, with a lot of community input and contractor and designer input. Mr. Chair, I think that concludes my CMGC section.
Okay. Members, just before we leave this section, I wanted to, first of all, thank Representative Cagle on our side of the aisle, our chamber, and our side of the aisle. Vice Chair Cagle has her hands up, and I'll let her speak. But she's worked very, very hard throughout this process to try to come to some agreement, compromise. And I think we're very close to that here. And I, before I call on Representative Cagle or Vice Chair Cagle, I wanted to just say that this is one of the items that, and Senator Newman, I'll get to you as well. This is one of the items that, you know, we have a number of provisions that are either House only or Senate only that Chair Newman and I are just working through. And a number of those are close and they're not quite there. I think this is in that category. I think this would be one of the first things we would vote on, you know, when we start taking things up again. But I wanted to just, you know, acknowledge the hard work and good work that you've done, Commissioner, and the contractors have done, as well as Representative Cagle. So with that, Vice Chair Cagle, I'm calling on you.
On this issue, and then also the part that I think is very important is the outreach and making sure that we bring other contractors into this process. And so I really just want to emphasize that I think, you know, the more people that we can get trained in this and do the outreach, I think that's very important. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. Chairman Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, thank you for bringing this forward. I recognize that this is simply one of the tools that you use in, you know, in moving forward with projects. And I have gone through the letter that you sent out to all of us dated May 11th. So I got four really basic questions. I'll ask them all at the same time. If you lose track of one, I'll restate it. But they're really basic. You know, in this particular process, who decides when to use the CMGC contract process? How is that project selected? And talk to us about the transparency and public input on the projects that are selected.
Okay.
I
think I got him, but this time I am going to phone a friend because Mr. Chairman and Senator Newman, this is where, you know, the commissioner, you know, I am not aware of a case where I have been asked which form of contract to use on a project. We actually have a process at MnDOT, and I believe Kevin Hagness is with us today. Kevin, are you on the line, and can you come on camera and walk the committee through this process? All right.
Mr. Hagness, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kevin Hagness. I'm MnDOT CMGC Program Manager.
You can proceed with your testimony or answer the questions from Chair Newman.
And Mr. Chair, we should just check that Mr. Hagness heard the question, which there were a couple of questions that Mr. Hagness is particularly suited to answer. Who decides what type of contract to use at MnDOT on any project? And then there was a second part of that, Senator Newman.
Chairman Newman.
You got stuck, didn't you, Commissioner? my questions are these. Who decides when to use the CMGC contract process? Number two, how is that project selected? And then three and four, the public input and transparency in this project. I would like some explanation as to transparency and public input.
Mr. Agnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Newman. So to start with your first question, who decides when to use CMGC? MnDOT uses a formal process for selecting a delivery method for a particular project. So we essentially have some indicators on a particular project that, hey, this project may be well suited for alternative delivery methods. There's something about it, whether it's the schedule, the complexity, risk, all of the above, that say, hey, give this some thought to alternative delivery. And by alternative delivery, we look at different tools in our toolbox, like construction manager, general contractor, or the design build delivery method, or even some innovative tools that we may have beyond those. Bottom line is, we come together with experts from MnDOT in various areas, disciplines, that you know, whether it be bridge, geotechnical, contracting experts. We look at evaluating kind of a risk-based approach, certain criteria, and it's the same process. We look at things like complexity, opportunities for innovation. We look at the risk profile for the project. We look at the schedule for the project. We look at certain constraints that the project has, could be funding, et cetera. And we evaluate all of these and we look at, okay, what can our delivery methods do for us to help us achieve the goals for the project? And essentially, we walk through this process collectively as a group and determine a recommendation for our leadership as to what is the most appropriate delivery method to use for a particular project. Overwhelmingly, the results of these workshops do not lean towards CMGC. But again, some of these very unique and or complex projects where they really have a significant amount of risk and they are really difficult to successfully deliver with our other delivery methods, we do at times, when having this tool, have, you know, yes, the process tells us CMGC is the most appropriate delivery method. And so that process is used by other agencies as well. It was actually developed, I believe, by the University of Colorado. It's used by agencies like the Colorado DOT, et cetera. In terms of how it's selected, then again, we make a recommendation based on input from kind of the practitioners within MnDOT, the experts in the various disciplines, as to what is the most appropriate delivery method. And then we basically send that information to our leadership, and usually that's our chief engineer and our assistant commissioners. They review the results. Everything is documented as part of this workshop documentation that we put together. I think to date, our leadership has concurred with the results by the people that conduct these workshops. We furthermore post that information for our industry folks, for the public online, so it is available. We share that information with our associated general contractors, our American Council of Engineering companies. Everything is very transparent. We meet with those folks periodically as well to discuss what's on the horizon for alternative delivery, why we chose, you know, the alternative delivery methods we have for the projects that have been selected. As far as specific public input, there really is not, to my knowledge, specific public input other than we do work with local agencies when we're having the discussion about the viability of, say, using CMGC to make sure, yes, do you have concerns with this? Do you understand why we're doing it? And are you supportive of it? Or are there some barriers there that this really isn't a viable option and we need to take it off the table? But there's not like a comment period, if you will, by the public itself to say, yes, we think CMGC is the right tool. It's more with the local elected officials, et cetera, the people working at the city, county, et cetera.
Chairman Newman, did you have any additional, I want to make sure that Mr. Hagness and Commissioner Anderson-Kelleher answered your questions.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner?
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, and to the third part of the question about public input, I think one thing to think about here is project selection is a separate process from the contracting process. So that those two things are related, but they are quite different. And I think Mr. Hagness did a good job describing that contracting process. I do want to say on the projects that I know of that have been CMGC that are in my awareness. So currently the Twin Ports Interchange project in Duluth, which is the project that is currently progressing in Duluth, has had a lot of public input. It has had probably some of the highest levels of public input by local officials, by neighborhood groups, to both help identify what is important in that project, what is not important in the project. The Port of Duluth has been very involved in that project because one of the main reasons the project is happening is the increased freight flow through the Port of Duluth and the need to be able to get the goods out of the Port of Duluth into the economy. So I would say that, you know, folks in the general public is less concerned about a contracting method. They are concerned about a delivery. They're concerned about how is this going to affect my life? How quickly are you going to get the project done? Is the project going to be done well? And is it going to meet the needs of our community? That has been, I think, that's a separate process and not really related to the contracting piece.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chair Newman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner and Mr. Hagness. You have very, very well answered my question, and I really do appreciate it. Mr. Hagness covered the questions more than adequately, and I just want to thank Mr. Hagness and Commissioner, you know, for answering those questions. That's all I have on this particular issue. Thank you, Commissioner. Okay.
Thank you. Are there any other questions about the CMGC process? And again, I think we're pretty close to. We're not taking up any motions today, but I think Mr. Chair Newman, this will probably be at the close to the top of the list when we do motions again. Who knows what form those will take. Commissioner.
So, Mr. Chair, I want to thank Representative Cagle for her work on this. I know Senator Howe has been very involved in this question, too, and raising good points along the way. So I really appreciate everyone's good input and follow through on this one. I hope we can get to a solution that can work for all parties. Mr. Chair, I did not prepare a slide on the Trunk Highway Fund and uses of the Trunk Highway Fund, but I would like to say a few things before the committee that I think will help us lead towards some understanding going forward. I first want to say I've heard Senator Newman. We've been working together now for a little over 2 years, and he has a concern about the uses of the Trunk Highway Fund. I have to say that MnDOT will, you know, stand by and maintain on the MnDOT side of things, and I'm not saying all of these uses because I can't speak adequately to the DPS side of this. That's a different agency. But from the MnDOT side of things, we do believe we have been in and on good solid territory in the use of the Trunk Highway Fund. But I've heard Senator Newman, and you know, I think his point is that the general fund should be sharing more in the funding of certain parts of the transportation system. And maybe there are some appropriate ways we could swap out those trunk highway funds for general funds. And so Senator Newman and Representative Hornstein and I had a very good conversation this week about some areas that MnDOT is identifying that might make sense to be funded through the general fund. One of them is our central office building rent. We do not own that building. The Department of Administration owns that building. It is a one place for sure that I could see us coming to agreement should the conference committee get an adequate general fund appropriation awarded to it, I guess I would say, because that has always been the challenge in my history with transportation over the years, that finding general fund dollars for transportation can be difficult. And there are a few other areas that I think we are willing to discuss dependent on that target level. And I think Senator Newman and I have talked a little bit about this. I think his bill identifies somewhere around $200 million ongoing to the general fund, although in discussions about things like the environmental services area, I think that we are coming to a closer agreement that that is more trunk highway related to the delivery of the trunk highway system. So hopefully I'm capturing where we're at in that discussion. And that is that, you know, we certainly are open to advancing and trying out general fund funding for some of these items. I think it also needs a deeper dive, and Senator Newman and Representative Hornstein and I talked about this week, that maybe there is some more work that can be done in the time between sessions to look at other potential places where trunk highway dollars can be moved into the main program and general fund dollars coming in to support systems around the delivery of the program. So we are open, and I want to say that because that is, I think, a fairly large change for MnDOT to say we are open to general fund dollars. So, Mr. Chairman, I know there's work to be done on that. I don't know if we're going to be working on that next week or we're going to be working on that in mid-June, but I'm hopeful that possibly we can keep our momentum going on this work.
I will make a comment and then call on Chairman Newman, but I would not underestimate how significant this is, what you've said on the record today, because I think it is new thinking and movement towards the Senate position. And I would concur that there is, at least in the short term, some interrelationship between any proposal we come up with and our general fund target. But, I looked at that list as well that's in the Senate bill, and there's some things that jump out at me too. You might find that hard to believe, Chair Newman, but I look at some of those, not all, Chairman, don't get too excited, but I look at some of those things and scratch my head and wonder why those are trunk highway expenditures. So, I think this is helpful, and again, just like the issue of the projects that are in the Senate bill, we're going to have to really examine things very closely and see what can be done. But I do appreciate your thinking. And again, this is, as you pointed out, Commissioner, this is not simply just a MnDOT issue. There's quite a bit of expenditures in DPS that I think we would need to consult with them about and get their perspective on. This is an important step forward, and I appreciate your conversation. And yes, we are going to have to, I would really even think even beginning next week, really start to identify things and as we move forward. I would not want to leave a discussion like this for the very last minute. And again, we want to be ready once we get the general fund target with what are these trunk highway expenditures that at least both sides can agree on initially that could be examined. So I'm going to call on Chairman Newman and then Representative Elkins. Chairman Newman.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, first of all, this is an issue, spending money out of the Trunk Highway Fund on things that may or may not be permissible as a highway purpose is something that I have been talking about for 5 years. And Commissioner, this is the first time that I have had a commissioner say, yeah, Newman, you might not be completely off base, and we are willing to talk about this. So I want you to know that I really do appreciate the openness that you have to at least being willing to talk about it. Chairman Hornstein and I have had several discussions over the years about general fund uses in the transportation arena. I don't know that we are necessarily always in agreement, but we have had discussions. And my feeling is that MnDOT has reached into the Trunk Highway Fund because transportation is starved for general fund money. And I have said this on the Senate floor. I think historically, the transportation arena gets about 0.5% of the total budget in the state of Minnesota. 0.5%, a ridiculously low percentage. And of that 0.5%, MnDOT only gets a certain amount for their operations. It's a very, very small percentage. And I think that's the fault of the legislature, not MnDOT. The Trunk Highway Fund is simply too large a pot of money, and it's irresistible when you don't have enough money to run your agency. And I think that's the conundrum that we have. And we are bumping up against the Constitution that says we have to spend this money for highway purposes. So this is a discussion that is certainly not over. I understand the lack of general fund money. I have indicated to the commissioner that MnDOT is going to have to enter the scrum for general fund money, even though MnDOT may not like that. But we cannot continue to impermissibly spend trunk highway funds on things that don't have anything to do with highway purposes. We just can't do that. And for every dollar that we spend that is an impermissible spending, we take that money away from trunk highways and what that money is really supposed to be spent for. So we will continue this discussion. Commissioner, thank you very much for acknowledging that we can at least talk about it. We will have to look very hard, very close to the list of issues that I have put into the Senate bill. That's my original bill. And it would be very helpful to me if for those areas that MnDOT believes really serve a highway purpose, if you could give us an explanation and some inside information, because you know your business better than we do. And I think that the Office of Environmental Studies is one that keeps coming up and apparently does in fact have a genuine highway purpose. So if you could help us by looking at the list and saying, this is the highway purpose, I think that would be helpful, because I suspect Chair Hornstein and I will be talking about that specifically in the very near future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Newman. And I don't know if you wanted to respond, Commissioner, and then we'll get to Representative Elkins.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Newman. And I heard what the request is. I also want to say growing up with four older brothers on a dairy farm meant that I can hold my own in the scrum of fighting for whatever it is. So if that's what it's going to take, we're going to go to town on that. So I just appreciate that we can have a conversation about this, and that we are both keeping an open mind about the use of the dollars, and we can detail that out for you. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, I needed to channel Representative Bernardi for a second here. So she had worked closely with the agency on some bill language related to trunk highway performance measures and standards. And it seemed to me to be the kind of thing that we might want to fold into this task force if we decide to go that route. I'm wondering if either the commissioner or Mr. Rudin would like to comment on that.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Just to be clear, you're talking about that project development task force that we talked about earlier, or something related to
the project evaluation subject in general.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit of a, I think that may be a separate issue of, right now we're talking about the trunk highway the issue in particular.
About trunk highway performance measures.
Oh, okay. Oh, performance measures. I see. Right. I got now, Representative Bernardi on performance measures. I thought you were talking about, okay. That's related and very much so. And when you said task force, did you mean the this section of the bill or the previous task force that we described?
Yeah, the topic, if we don't pass this provision, be something that could be discussed in the context of that task force.
Okay. Yeah, I mean let's keep that idea on the table. Thank you for clarifying, and Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, to Representative Elkins' point and Representative Bernardi's work, I don't know where it should live right now, but I will tell you, I did get to participate yesterday in our national meeting, ASHTO's Board of Directors meeting, where we were hearing a little bit more. We heard from the acting Federal Highway Administrator, Stephanie Pollack, who was the commissioner or secretary in Massachusetts. And I think that this is something that we may want to just pause on for a bit, because my understanding is we may be getting some new federal guidelines on performance measures with actual measurables. So until we get that, and I think that probably will come through reauthorization in the fall, it's a worthy topic and an important topic, but I certainly think that if Minnesota is going to set performance standard measures, we want them to align or be related to what we're going to be measured on by the federal government. So that's my only observation on it, is that there is movement on that issue federally.
I will relay that to Representative Bernardi. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you. And thank you for the clarification on that. And, you know, we do have, again, this new idea here that's been put on the table. And I think this isn't really the end of the discussion, Representative Elkins. I think you kind of reminded us of that. It's really, you know, we have some new ideas on the table, and we need to build on those. Okay, members, I don't see any additional questions, and these were the items that we wanted MnDOT to address today. Before I turn it over to Chairman Newman to kind of walk us through what members can expect over the weekend and moving forward, I will call on you, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, for any final thoughts, comments, observations. For my part, a big thank you for spending so much time with us today and your thoughtful responses to some of the requests, particularly on the Senate side, although I'm certainly sharing some of those concerns as well. And we'll just give you the last word, and I'll call on Chairman Newman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I want to thank the team at MnDOT who worked on the presentations today. There's a very talented group of people that I get to work with every day, and I want to thank them for their hard work. They are above and beyond the call of duty in regard to putting this together. And I also want to say to all of you, thank you very much for your attention and really great questions to these ideas and provisions. And I want to thank particularly you, Chair Hornstein and Chair Newman, for I think what should be a model of a conference committee in the virtual setting, which is really good dialogue and exchange and being able to have respectful conversations. I know we have a ways to go till we get to cross the finish line, whenever that may be, but hopefully we can continue to build on this good work. So thank you everyone for all of your terrific work. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I do appreciate those remarks and observations. And I think, again, what you're seeing here, I hope, will be the beginnings of a new kind of conversation and the beginnings of a potential compromise on some of the many issues that have been brought up today. And, you know, and this is where we really have to just, you know, dig in and get into the very specifics of policy. But I'm really confident that with our start today, we can find a way forward. I'm going to turn it over to Chair Newman, and then after he speaks, I'll make a couple of closing comments, and then we'll adjourn relatively soon. So, Chairman Newman, I know you have the gavel tomorrow, but you may have an announcement for us.
Well, I may or may not. before we talk about tomorrow, Commissioner, thank you very much for coming in. And you are correct. I also want to thank the folks from MnDOT that put the slides together and answered our questions. I think it's meaningful. And as between Chair Hornstein, myself, and the various members of this conference committee, it will remain civil, cordial, and hopefully we'll get across the finish line, as you put it, whenever that might be. As far as the conference committee tomorrow, we are not going to meet for two specific reasons. Number one, we still don't have our targets. And without those, it's really pretty difficult for us to do anything meaningful when we're going to, for anything that involves spending money. And the other thing is that there are a number of amendments that we have been working on now for the last few days. We do not yet have a complete agreement on them. We've got a complete agreement on two or three, but I'm not going to call a conference committee on Saturday to handle a couple of non-controversial amendments. So we will continue to work on those amendments and await our targets. So you have the rest of the weekend off as far as this conference committee is concerned. And I'll leave it to Chair Hornstein as to what we're going to do on Monday. Chair Hornstein.
Well, I see Senator Jasinski has his hand up. So, Senator Jasinski.
Sir, I just want to make a comment since it's Police Week. I see Colonel Langer's on there and some State Patrol. I think we should thank them for all their service since it's Police Week. Thank you for all they do. I can't say enough good things about Colonel Langer and our State Patrol and what they do for us. So I want to say thanks during Police Week.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Let's see. So, Chair Newman, you asked about Monday, and at this point, my understanding is that there are. I imagine we'll do work on the Senate and House floor, but any potential. If we were to advance if we decide that there is an opportunity to advance what we have now and agree to that, and if that's something agreeable to Chair Newman, we would consider that. And there might be an opportunity on Monday to to have a mini conference committee report, but we have not made any decisions about that. I'll tell members that if we do that, and again, that would be our agreed upon provisions, my understanding is that we could then just get people's signatures on that and advance that. But Chair Newman and I will have that conversation. So, at this point, Mr. Chair, I don't anticipate there would not be a reason, there would not be even an opportunity for us to meet on to include those outstanding provisions that you mentioned in any kind of mini report. So, those will just have to wait, I think. If you and I can come to some agreement on a few more of these things, maybe there's an opportunity. But, at this point, I think if we have that special session, those items would be appropriately addressed then. So what I'm hinting at here potentially, Mr. Chair, is this may be, and I don't know, things will evolve over the weekend and Monday, but if this is the last meeting of this particular conference committee for House File 1684, I wanted to thank everybody for, a great committee and great staff work. It's possible again that we'll meet on Monday, but not likely at this point. And just to review, members, what happens here, because I've gotten a number of questions, if we go into a special session, then this conference committee is no longer exists. Basically, we start with a blank slate again on transportation. My understanding is that, again, all of those 50 some odd provisions that we've agreed to and voted on, we're not going to have to go through them one by one by one again, that if and when there is an agreement on transportation, I think I would prefer to say when there's an agreement on transportation, those provisions and then additional things that we agreed to then would be incorporated into the broader bill that we would then bring back to the floor in the special session. So you don't have to worry about those going away. I mean, they technically do, but we have agreed to them and they'll come back in some form or another. But as for this particular conference committee, it dissolves in the new special session. It's no longer there, and House File 1684 is sort of poof as well. So Senator Newman and I, of course, will await instructions from the leadership as to what happens next. I think there's some talk of working groups, et cetera. And if that's the case, obviously we will be wanting to stay in close contact with all of you. I don't know, Chair Newman, did I leave anything out with that process explanation here?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that you have. I have nothing further, so I think you covered it more than adequately.
Great. Well, again, members, if this is our last meeting, a huge thank you. It has been, it has been and will continue to be a pleasure to work with all of you, and particularly Chairman Newman, our incredible partisan and nonpartisan staff. Thank you. But this is probably just another chapter we're finishing here. There's a lot more to go and a lot more work to be done. And so with that, members, this conference committee for 1684 is adjourned for today. Thank you very much.